I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
iZotope by Native Instruments have been at the heart of great production tools and performance plugins for a long, long time now. They've helped guitar nerds to sound crisp and polished no matter how bad Matt's mic technique is for almost a decade, and they can and should be a part of your home recording setup too. iZotope have just released Ozone 11, the most advanced mastering software you can possibly get your hands on. Ozone 11 includes AI-assisted software that can listen to your mixes and make suggestions on a final mix. Honestly, it's been years since I've so much as touched an EQ fader. I just let Ozone do the work, and I have a pro quality mastered podcast in minutes. Ozone Elements is as little as $49, and don't forget you get 10% off all iZotope and Native Instruments plugins with discount code NERDS10. Philip.
Yes.
As it's sort of Halloween time, we're going to start everything with a Halloween joke this week.
I'm ready. I stay ready.
What do you call two witches living together? Broom mates.
Oh, dear.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by the host and creator of the 40 Watt Podcast, Philip Carter.
Well, hello there.
Hello
How
there.
Are you, Joe?
I'm good. It's lovely to have you back on the podcast, Philip. It's been a few weeks.
It's always good to be back on and talk about all kinds of nerdery.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Well, this is one of the best things about having you on is you're constantly buying and selling new gear. So there's always something to talk about, which is really good. Dear listener, welcome back. Welcome to another episode. Of course, we're on the third week now of the third episode now of the Vintage Pro Shop guitar build. So this week, Philip and I are going to be looking at some of the color suggestions you lot have made. I've boiled them down to four or five of the more popular ones that I'm going to be putting a poll out later for you guys to whittle it down and decide from those. But that's going to be good. We're going to take a look at some of the more wild suggestions that we've been having come in. It's been great. People have been really getting involved in that. I've been getting emails, info@guitarnerds.net, DMs on Instagram, messaging. You can always message me on Facebook. Everyone knows how to find me on there. And messaging in the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook as well. We're going to continue to do this vintage build, although next week will be a week off because, dear listener, everything's going to be a little bit out of sync at the moment. Next week's going to be a London International Guitar Show special with me and JD Short. Which when you hear it will have happened the previous week. Basically, I'm going on tour, so I'm recording like three podcasts in 1 week. So everything's sort of higgledy-piggledy. So we won't do any vintage guitar stuff on the next one because I'm going to record it like in a couple of days and you guys won't have decided what color you want yet. So there's full disclosure there.
If you want to know why Joe doesn't cover any of the new releases that came out next week.
Literally, there's so many brands that have been sending me like press releases of stuff. It's the start of November is just going to be this mad time of new releases, and I'm going away for the first 10 days of it.
I feel like the last 2 months have been nothing but rapid fire releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which is wild because NAMM is coming up. Like everything's coming out now.
I am glad we did speak. Matt and I have spoken about this probably that we've started the last two podcasts speaking about this a little bit, but I am excited that stuff's coming out again because Gear of the Year is around the corner. We've got some exciting things. I feel like I was like, really don't want the Fender Tone Pro thing. What is it called?
Oh, don't. The Tone Master Pro.
Tone Master Pro. There we go. I really don't want that to be the most exciting thing of the year.
It's not. The DM-101 came out, and that was far more exciting.
Obviously, the DM-101. But, you know, we're going to talk about some of the new things a bit on this podcast. What a week. We've had some new stuff from Helix, everyone. Yes. What do they call it? The HX1.
It was not the thing I was waiting for. Sorry.
I'm still excited. It's a new M5, essentially. That is super exciting. That is incredibly awesome. The price point's great. It's an H9 killer. It's everyone can have one on their board. Remember how excited everyone was about the M5? This is going to be just that. That's awesome. UA just seemed to be... Universal Audio, they're a guitar brand now. They've just been throwing new releases out.
So much new gear from UA. So much new gear.
Yeah.
It's I can't keep up. Literally, we were talking about it in the pre-show. I missed releases from them. Like, I still don't know the names of their pedals from their last release, and they just put out more stuff.
Yeah, very exciting. I mean, obviously, I think the Lion's probably the most exciting thing. They're sort of marshalling in the box. And we'll get on to talking about that, dear listener. But for me, an LA-2A compressor in pedal form, I am utterly happy with my Thorpe FX Fat General. It is the best compressor I've ever had. But I am going to buy that UA LA-2A in a box because it's an LA-2A by the people that make LA-2As in a box. That's going to be a great compressor.
Yeah, that's a big one because as far as I'm aware, I think the only other LA-2A compressor I know on the market for guitar players is the Union Tubes and Transistor Lab compressor.
Right, right.
And that's the only other one I knew. I'm sure there's another. Somebody's yelling at their you know, podcasting device right now.
I'll tell you what one of the other ones is. The HX1.
Really?
Well, the HX1, if it's got all the Helix effects in it, then it has their LA2A.
Oh, that makes sense.
I appreciate it's a digital version, but nonetheless, it was very good. Whenever I used Helix, I always used that compressor. I thought it was an excellent... Well, actually, no. I always used that compressor until Billy Sheehan had his... whatever it was called, Rochester comp or something. I can't remember. That's not it, but it's something like that, dear listener. He had one of his compressors added to it. He did a rig rundown with no treble recently. Do you care about Billy Sheehan, Philip?
Not necessarily, but also I'm an interesting guitar player in that I didn't have a favorite guitar player until I'd been playing for like 10 years.
Right.
Because... I've always preferred, my heroes have always been songwriters, and they were never guitar players. And so, even though I played guitar, it took me 10 years and somebody finally saying, no, you have to have a favorite guitarist. Maybe it wasn't 10 years. I'm probably being hyperbolic there. But, you know, I finally had to pick one. I was like, Jeff Beck. All right. And I just made Jeff Beck my favorite guitar player.
Oh, there you go. That is a good choice. He's a great player.
Yeah. But so when people talk about players and they name a name, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know them from this band. I don't really know them very much as a player other than I know the music that they put out. So, and it's outside my genre. It's just, I listen to it and kind of respect it in the same way that I listen to certain late Coltrane records and appreciate the experimentation, but I don't really want to listen to it all the time.
No, sure. I understand that. I was watching this No Treble Billy Sheehan rig rundown. Of course, he's had countless rig rundowns throughout the years, and definitely among bass players, Philip and dear listener, he's a hero of equipment. He's a man who knows how to have a massive rig and a really specific sound. Of course, he has his Yamaha Attitude bass, which has dual outputs, so he can run those to two separate amps, one where he scoops out all the mids and trebles and runs as like a sub, and one that he basically has an unhappy face on an EQ, and the other one loads and loads of mid-range. And you know, a few, he was always Pierce preamps an Ampeg SVT Pro 3s, I think. That was always his jam for years. And the Pierce preamps, were discontinued. He bought up every single Pierce preamp he possibly could, but they don't last. They do break, and unfixably. And I remember maybe 7 or 8 years ago watching a rig rundown, and him saying, "Oh, you know, like I've actually only got two Pierce preamps left, so I'm really hoping these last because it's such an essential part of my sound." Which, of course, is why shortly after he teamed up with, or he was approached by, Line 6 Helix, or Line 6 rather, and their Helix, and they modeled his Pierce preamps into the Helix, and they are standard. You can get his Bushy, as they're called, Bushy preamps, Billy Sheehan, and you can get those preamps are standard in the Helix. They do a standard and a jumped version where he jumps the two inputs on them, and you can blend those together to get that sort of sound, which is very cool. So he now uses a Helix, and of course later, because his compressors are so specific, they added his compressor as well, so he has the whole thing. He used to have Helix.
Oh, that's
rack.
Really rad.
Yeah, really cool. So he was able to emulate that completely, and he moved to Hartkey. He was using their LH and their HAs. He moved to the LHs eventually because they're just, it's, you know, it's a solid state amp, but it has a three band EQ and a volume. Like, that's it. Yeah. So it's basically a power amp, and he's letting the Helix do the work. And now he's moved to the little Class D Hartkeys, which, you know, just, I think, for weight, basically, as he was saying.
Sure. So that makes sense.
Just got like four 115s and a couple of the Hartkey Class D heads. And then he's moved to he's stopped using the rack mount version of the Helix, and he's gone for just the Helix floor, but he sits it on top of his amps. And he said, the reason is because the screen's on the front and he can't see what's going on the Helix because he sits it a little lower. Because he's only on 215s, so they're a little bit shorter than he is. So he's moved to the Helix floor to sit on his amp so that if he wants to come over and look down at it, he can. That was his reasoning.
I love it. No,
yeah, that
I
was
love
his
it.
Reasoning. But which is why he has to use Morningstar switches, because he doesn't have the option to use the Helix foot pedals.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting solution to it. I totally get, and obviously it's impossible for me to, with any authority, disagree with a man who has that kind of pedigree that he has playing in bands. So I'm gonna roll with it, but I think the Helix is still underrated. I'm on record as being a total fanboy of the unit anyway. I think it does everything well. I still use Native all the time. And you know, let's get into the HX1. Let's start here for a second, because let's go ahead and talk about it. And I'll tell you what I've been holding out for is a new flagship Helix. You know, whatever they're going to call it. I have been told it will not be called Helix 2, y'all. It's just, it's not going to be called.
What would you possibly want more from? Like, the thing is, it's not behind. You know, Fender have just tried to release this thing, and it's fallen short even of Helix. You know, the interface is better than Kemper. Neural DSPs are totally different. Neural DSP are failing to appeal to anyone outside of prog and post-metal. So they're,
and praise and worship. They've got a strong hold on a lot of the praise and worship world as well.
Oh, more than Line 6. I thought that was...
I think it's real close. I think it's a lot closer than we think it is, but that's just in conversations I've had. I think there's a heavy split there.
Uh-huh, I see.
But I don't know. I just... It isn't that I want more. It's that it's this mental hang up. And listeners, y'all are, or dear listeners, as one of your Facebook group members said, we're going to continue to refer to y'all as dear listeners. So it isn't that I necessarily think there needs to be new, because the Helix, I know y'all say on the show it's 10 years old. It's actually not even 10 yet. It's 8. It came out in 2015.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Right. No. Okay.
And so it's not even that old yet, but it is getting, you know, people expect. I think we're all in the Apple model of digital and electronic products that we expect. Oh, there's a new model every so often, and that's why you're seeing things like the HX1 and the HX Stomp and the HX Stomp XL and the HX FX. And this is really smart. I think this is HX1 is going to be great. It's going to be really good for somebody who just wants that do all switch, Swiss Army knife pedal board effect. And now they don't have to buy a Stomp to do that.
The Stomp's expensive, you know, it's still £500 pounds. You know, that's a big chunk to spend.
And the HX FX is great, but it's huge. Yeah. And it can be more affordable, but it's huge. I think the only thing that, and I understand why they didn't, sort of, but I feel like if they had made the HX1 and actually, if they would release the same thing and do one called, I don't know, HX Amp, and they just put the amp models on it, it would decimate the pedal board amp model, the world. It would completely disrupt that world, because right now we've got a lot of units like the Walrus AC1 and the, I think it's AC1, y'all know the one I'm talking about, the modeler, amp modeler. Yeah. You've got the Strymon Iridium out there that's an amp modeler, but it has limited options. And then, of course, you've got all of the Universal Audio stuff that's out there now, which we're going to get to here in a little bit, which are great, but they're single amp models. Whereas if you had a Helix single foot, single stomp box sized amp modeler where you had all the Helix amp models on it.
Which we know they're going to continue to update and add new amps every time Ben Adrian fancies it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that would be a complete and utter market disruptor, because there would be nothing else like that on the market. Yeah, Tonex might be the closest, actually.
Yeah, that's that is a good point. Yeah, I mean the downside, if there is any downside, of the HX1 is obviously it's designed to be, it's $299. It's designed to be, I know that's still a lot of money, dear listener, but it's affordable for the type of thing it is, for what you're getting. The downside, I guess, is you can only have one effect at one time. So even though it's got MIDI switching, which is great, so you can, you know, you can plumb that into a rig, have that running through your own switcher, but it's not like you can't do the same thing you could with HX effects, where you could use, you know, multiples of any of the effects. That is the downside. But nonetheless, it still has, like, even you look at it simply, it's got great models of all the Strymon big hitters in there. Mm-hmm. And it's less money than buying one of those Strymon big hitters. So
you know what it's less money than? And I'm just going to tell you, it is less money than a used H9 core. I mean, H9 Max.
Right.
Used. Whoa, it is less than a used H9 Max.
Yeah. That's it. This is a great project. This is the sort of project that could win Gear of the Year for me. I know it's a lot of people will probably not like that, because it's not new. It's these effects have been around, as you pointed out, for 8 years, right? Most of them. But it is a very, very convenient, handy form factor. I tell you what, when I sort of shared it on the morning that it came out with the old Guitar Nerds hosts, with Jay and Mark and Matt on a chat, and Mark was like a classic Line 6 marketing strategy release the same product for 10 years in different chassis. And I was like, oh yeah, that is kind of what that company does, but I don't mind because this is a convenient thing. We can still have a pedal board of all those things. I know we could with the Stomp, dear listener, but I don't want the amp models. I don't need those. I want some of the weird cool effects that you get on a Helix.
There are a lot of people who just use the HX effects because that's what they want, but it's massive and it takes up a ton. It's heavy, takes up a ton of space. You can get two of these almost for the cost of a new HX effects.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, it's going to be an interesting fight for Gear of the Year this year as we are getting closer to that time of year on the Guitar Nerds podcast, because you've got to look back and the H90 came out this year as well. So that's an interesting fight and where really the fight is one effect at a time versus two and the major price differential.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so I think it's going to be an interesting year, but I like that this came out. It just wasn't what I was waiting on. I don't know why I need a new flagship, Joe, except that there's a part of me that doesn't want to buy something and then have the new version come out like 4 months later.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, so a couple of weeks ago, and I'd messaged you about the fact that I was doing this anyway, but I was like, I really want to get back into Helix, really feeling that Line 6 itch at the moment. And my Helix LT is with my friend Kerry, who lives in Bristol, and you know, like, I think she's using it, and she's like, oh, yeah, I can get it back to you. I'm down at Christmas. We'll hook up, and I can get to you now. And I was like, I really want to use the Helix like right now. So I was like, I'll just look because, you know, I can buy one and then sell it and I won't lose any money. So I had a little look around, found a crazy deal, like one listed for proper Helix floor listed for like £800. And then the guy, you know, you follow it and someone, you get sent a deal. It's obviously an automated deal. Sent me a deal for like £740 and offered him £700. And he was, yeah, fine. So I got a Helix floor for £700, which is incredibly cheap. They go for, in the UK at the moment, Philip, they're going for like £950, a grand on the secondhand market, even though they're only £1,150 new or whatever. Not a lot seems to be lost on those secondhand at the moment. So I got that, and it turned up, and one of the knobs didn't work. One of the the knobs that control the features of whatever model you've got, like the second knob in, didn't react, didn't do anything. So I was like, I looked up a few things. I went into like safe mode and did all the check. You check like button responses, and I was like, right, so it looks like it's probably, you know, dust inside the unit. And so I messaged Ben Adrian. I was like, you know, do you think I can take this apart? And he was like, good luck taking apart a Helix. And I watched some videos online, and they were like, so what you've got to do before you take the screws off the back of the Helix is you need to unscrew the connectors and the screws for every single output on the back of the Helix.
No,
that's 40 screws. I was like, I'm not the chances of it getting back together again. So I contacted the guy, and he was lovely. I think he just hadn't used it. I honestly think it was just dust in the unit, but enough to scupper the working of it. And he was lovely. He gave me a refund. But it means that I'm Helixless for now. And of course, like, you know, I'd account that money has gone, and now it's back in my possession. So it's already in the pool of money that can be used for something. So I've been having a little look around, and I was thinking about a Kemper Profiler Stage.
Oh yeah,
where were your thoughts on Kemper? So this is this dear listener is the Kemper Profiler amp built into a floor pedal, basically. Because I'm not carrying around a big rack mount thing. Like the head I use is tiny. I don't want to have to rack things. So just a pedal is fine. Where do you sit on Kemper? Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 50 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help their guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad developed in 2021 the Keep It Simple Setup, aka KISS. And now thousands of guitar players, from beginners to pros, have learned how to set up their own guitar. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anyone can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, and many how-to videos, both by setup tasks as well as many complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Their website has a very cool setup hub section where you can find everything you need to know so you can start setting up your guitar properly. Follow them on social media and at musicnomadcare. Kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple Setup.
So here's my take on it, and I'm gonna get so much hate because I know even in my own friend group I get hate for this take. The Kempers sound great if you have amps you love and you need to tour them. That you can capture, you know, your exact settings, you know the way you like it. Awesome. If you don't, though, if that is not your thing and you are just looking for a unit, and I appreciate that there is a market you can get other people's captures, or I'm sorry, they use them profiles in the Kemper, is called profiles. You can use other people's profiles. I'm not that person. I'm just not. I love amps. I love real amps. That's great. But if I'm doing a digital solution, I'm doing a digital solution because I'm already compromising, right? Because I already don't want to do this. I don't want to play live with a modeler. That's just who I am. Right, I want to play with a real amp. So I didn't like when I've gotten to play Kempers. What I didn't like was the way the EQ functions. Now I understand some of these things have changed, but it's already soured me to it. It's, you know, I turn the EQ on in the amp. I'm going to use air quotes. And it doesn't actually change the way the amp itself would have changed.
Oh, really? I thought that was the whole point.
Mm-mm. So with a profile, what you do is you profile at the knob setting that you are profiling that amp, and that's your amp sound. If you start tweaking EQ after, it's like adding an EQ in your DAW at the end of it.
Yeah,
it's not actually changing the amp the way it would have changed. You've got to actually make profiles of your amp at all the various settings you would use to actually be able to do it. Now, there's a thing called liquid profiling now, or liquid EQ, or whatever their term they're trying to trademark. And I can't keep up, y'all.
Sounds
but,
filthy.
Because Quad Cortex is doing the same thing where they've added this liquid EQ where like it changes more naturally to your amp, but it's still not quite the same. To me, I like the way Line 6 does it, which is not something I ever thought I would say prior to me having a Helix, because I was definitely a critic. I had the Bean. I had, you know, I've gone through Line 6 products over the years. They actually model component by component the amps that they model.
Right.
They don't just say, oh, it sounds sort of like this. Let's create something sort of similar. They actually get down to the component level, which is why there aren't a few models. Like they were once asked why there's not a Dumble on there. And I'm trying to remember who was in the interview. I can't remember. But they said, because we haven't found anyone yet who's willing to let us take their Dumble apart. That's why they don't have a Dumble in the Helix.
That's so like, awesome.
Yeah. What, they're like, we haven't found anyone willing to let us.
What wonderful ideal to stick to. I mean, I realize it's not an ideal. It's literally how the product works. But that's great. What great attention to detail. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's why I like the way the Line 6 sounds. Also, the Kemper menu system is trash.
Is
like, you're gonna lose me on a digital product if your interface is trash. I appreciate that Matt is on here with Boss. I love Boss products. I had the Boss 500 series stuff, and the menus killed me. They absolutely murdered me. Theirs isn't trash, but it is not the most amazing thing ever.
It's one thing that I think the Fender modeler, why isn't that name going in? The Tone Pro?
Tone Master Pro.
Tone Master Pro. There we go. It's one thing with that the Fender has, I think, changed, even though I think that their screen in the menu is way, way over the top. Like, I don't care about the graphics side of things. Yeah. And that seems to be what Fender are selling the entire product on. It's like when Blackstar was selling the St. James entirely on the weight. Fender are going entirely on the screen resolution, but and not the sound. But it has changed the goalposts. Like, Line 6 has almost become, the Helix has almost become the most basic because there's no touch screen, things like that. I don't want touch screen. But
I don't want it either.
Line 6 is good, and it's got me, the way Fender have done it, got me thinking. I was like, huh, well, actually, yeah, the Line 6 one makes the most sense. It's so easy to use. I can see my signal path. It's easy to create multiple signal paths. It's easy to do my own thing in there. I found with Neural DSP with Quad Cortex, really good, but they're like, here are the things you can do. Now do them.
Yep.
Whereas Helix is a bit more freeform. Fender, again, same, very fixed, but like great graphics, obviously, really easy to build something with. And yeah, it's left Kemper with their sort of, 1980s bedside clock display. a little bit behind. And Boss as well. I'm not excluding Boss. Like, Boss did what they could with the GT1000, but it was still a two-color screen. Not that that's a problem. It was definitely the GT1000 was better because at least you could see everything. The Core, I find very difficult to use because at any given time, you can see one little line of blocks. It's very difficult to see your whole effects chain and know what you're doing on the fly. Fine for programming, and the sounds are great. And Matt will talk until the cows come home about how responsive, how the latency is. You know, the least, it is the quickest responsive digital modelers in GT and GX.
Sound great. They sound great, but I can't work them because my brain doesn't work that way. And y'all, I've had everyone come tell me, oh, well, you just got to think of it this way. You got to think, no, y'all. My brain functions the way it functions. I'm 42 years old. This is how things work.
Right.
And it's not just that I'm getting older. That's the way I've always been. It's got to be something that works with me. The Helix interface makes sense to me. I can visualize everything that's going on. I can see the entire picture of everything happening. I also don't want a touch screen, and I've tried to explain this to people, and the people who don't understand me at all tend to be, and y'all, I mean no shade because I was one of these, it tends to be the church worship guitarists who are playing in a environment where they don't have, someone who's six vodka tonics in and waving their drink around in front of the stage, or, somebody's stacking beer bottles at the front of this bar's tiny stage. Yeah. That's where I'm playing. And I don't trust those things not to get completely ruined and be inoperable at all.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I could say the same of Quad Cortex. I think virtually every single poster person that they have for the modeler is the type of guitarist, and it's obviously not worship stuff. It tends to be that tech metal side of things. They're the type of players that stand still and shred, and that's fine. They're probably not a drop of sweat's gonna fall on those.
Yeah.
That said, bands like Architects actually use Quad Cortex, but where their Quad Cortexes are, they're in racks backstage.
Yeah.
They're not on the floor in front of them. I just wouldn't want it either.
So on that, I'm surprised that Quad Cortex hasn't come out with a rack mount version yet. For as many people that just rack them,
yeah,
I don't know. So I'm going to move us along a little bit. I'm going to take that because we will sit and talk about this and wax poetic about my absolute love for Line 6. And I'll take all the hate that y'all want to throw at me. Yeah. But on the amp modeling route, the new Lion by Universal Audio.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I feel like this should have been in the original three they put out instead of the Woody, the Tweed one.
Yeah.
Instead of the Tweed, it should have been a black panel fender, a Vox, and the Marshall.
Of course. Like it was a glaring omission from their first selection, but a welcome addition now. Maybe because the Marshall in a box is the most done. You know, it's the most emulated.
It is the most done, but at the same time, a lot of the Marshall in a box, they're just drive pedals, not a true amp simulation. Sure. I feel like this is hitting all of those folks who are, and there's way more than I ever gave credit for, who are just like classic rock junkies and they're, you know, just straight ahead rock and roll. Hey, here's your pedal board amp that you've been waiting on.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody else is doing it like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. I like that you've got a selection of Marshalls in there. This is what they're doing with all of these. They're giving you like the best of. So you've got a super lead, a super bass, and the Brown, which is, you know, obviously going to be an Eddie Van Halen plexi.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess. But the having a super bass on there, I'm very excited about. I feel like that's one that always gets onto these type of units.
And it should. I had a 71 super bass that I used to gig, 100 watt 412. Man, sound guys loved to see me coming for the tiny little blues gigs I was playing with it. It was fantastic. And it was loud AF. Are the youth still saying AF? Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I don't either, but I'm going to keep saying it. Yeah, it was just too loud. And somebody had modded it at some point, and it had a master volume installed in it. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, it was completely unusable. But I did sell that amp, and I regret it to this day. I sold it to buy a Mesa Boogie, and it was not my best decision. The Mesa Boogie was great, but it was not 1971 Marshall super bass good.
Sure.
Yeah, but I also was young and stupid and didn't appreciate what I had. So I'm glad to see that on there. I'm glad to see it's nice to have someone doing the Marshall thing. But I mean, this isn't the first one. This is just the slimmest one. I feel like they almost waited too long because with Friedman putting out the IRX and some other products that are hitting the market, they actually have competition. If they'd come out sooner, they had no competition. Like, there was nobody else really doing this, like, amp on your pedal board kind of Marshall thing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, would you ever look at one of these solutions, one of the UA pedals for an amp plus option?
I tried the Dream 65, and I didn't have a great experience with it, but enough people have told me how much they love it that I feel like I need to revisit and feel like I just got something wrong. I was using it incorrectly or something.
Right.
But ultimately still I'm in the real amp boat and probably will be till the day I die. I own a Captor X for a reason. I own a Tone King Iron Man 2 attenuator for a reason. It's so that I can play these things live.
Yeah.
Also, I don't trust sound guys. Y'all don't trust sound guys. Yeah. The places I play, most of the time, the only thing going through the PA is vocals and maybe the bass drum, you know? So I don't have the PA support that you need to go direct anyway.
Right.
So
would you consider the Aux Stomp? Would you consider that as an option?
I mean, probably not, to be honest, even though I think it's a great unit and I'm glad it exists and I see the players that it makes sense for. But for me, I just use the Captor at this point.
Yeah.
I guess theoretically, I could use the Iron Man and line out of it into the Aux Stomp. I haven't fully looked at that. So there's a possibility there. But no, I it just doesn't speak to me. It isn't something I have a need for.
Right.
Now if my situation changed, honestly, if I went into a situation where I needed to be more direct, I'd just get a Helix again.
This is it.
We're right back around. Circle back around. As good as I think these products are, I'm already compromising to go direct. I'm gonna do what I have to do, kind of thing.
Yeah. I really want this the Helix thing to work. I really want to get back into that side of things. And I was doing some work with this great guitarist called Rachel Wood, and I needed her to send me some little blues licks. And she sent them through like DI'd, and then she was like, also here's some with some Kemper models, you know, so you can hear how I intended them to be. And I was like, what do you think? What do you think about Kemper? You know, I'm thinking about getting that, maybe getting back into Line 6. How do you feel? It's like a, you know, she is a touring, gigging, full-time, professional session guitar player. And she said, they're not bad, but for anything serious, a decent amp plus preamp plus re-pedals will always be better.
That's it.
And this is a person whose entire job would be made a lot easier if it wasn't the case.
Yeah. Well, that's what I say all the time. I wish that I got the joy in playing direct and that being the only thing I do the way a lot of players do. I wish it spoke to me because it would be so much simpler. It would be so much easier. I own way more amps than I want to talk about. I own, if I could just have, I have way too many pedals. I really don't want to talk about that. If I could just have a Helix or a Quad Cortex or a name, insert your modeler or profiler of choice there. If I could just have that and maybe a powered cab and a guitar, and that made me happy and made me, you know, that's all I ever wanted to play, I would have so much more money in my bank account. it's true. And I don't, because it doesn't spark joy.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
If we want to go fully Marie Kondo on it.
Well, I mean, if you're going to stick with the real stuff, Universal Audio might have you covered as well, because they've just released a new line of compact pedals, just normal compact pedals. They're not amps in a box. They're not anything else. They're just proper old school, one in, one out guitar pedals. They've released the Teletronics, the Brigade, and the Flow. So that's obviously an LA-2A compressor, is the Teletronics. Mm-hmm. The Brigade is a chorus vibrato, and the Flow is a vintage tremolo. They draw from the UA Max and the UA Astra, basically, is the idea behind these. I'm excited about a move into, it's like a new premium pedal brand on the market when they start doing regular things.
Yep.
I'm very excited, as I said, about the LA-2A. It's a dead simple compressor. It just has gain and peak and a mix control, which is kind of how the rack mount version works. And then just a switch between compression and limiting. So you can get that really hard limiting or that sort of quite natural sounding sucky compression. Even though I think we've been led to believe that compressors need to be really complicated, there's been this move towards multiband and things like that. And that's great if you actually want to compress a signal. But if you want it to sound like there's a compressor on your signal, i.e. if you want to use a compressor as an effect, just like all vintage uses of compressor are, all classic uses of a compressor are, they were trying to do that modern thing that multibands do, but it didn't really work. And they ended up with this sound, and this sound has become what we love. And the Teletronics is going to do that very well, very simply.
Absolutely.
From the company do the LA-2A.
I think it's great that they're doing this, because I got tempted by, I found a good deal on a Starlight a while back.
Right.
And I can't remember if that was late last year or early this year. I got really tempted by it. So I bought it, check it out, figured I'd resell it if I didn't like it. Because I was critical of the UA pedals when they came out.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
They're expensive. No MIDI. I don't know. It seemed complex for the. I take all of it back. They're the best sounding pedals I've ever heard.
Right.
They just are. They're amazing. I got the Starlight. I tried it out against my timeline and I sold my timeline.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I sold my timeline because I got everything that I needed out of a delay out of the Starlight. I bought the Golden and the Astra not long after, and I sold my Big Sky and my Mobius. I sold the entire Strifecta because they took up less space. They did exactly what I wanted to. They were easier to navigate, and they sounded better. And so I've been sort of on that train. I haven't bought any more UA pedals since, but I love the smaller effects. Like, for example, I'm a tremolo junkie, so I'm really excited to see the flow. I need to do some more listening and maybe even try one out. But I love the simplicity. Three knobs and a switch.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Three different voicings by the looks of it.
Yeah. I think the Dharma is there because that's in the Astra. I think that's their harmonic tremolo, but don't quote me on that. And then the 65 is obviously going to be an optical trim. I don't know what the square is. So
just something modern, modern yeah. tremolo, I guess.
Like a choppy tremolo.
Yeah.
But yeah, pedals don't have to be, when you were talking about the compressor, people forget how just great a simple compressor is. Listeners, you can't see this, but I'm showing Joe. It's two-knob Keeley compressor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A great compressor.
I bought this used for $74.
Because everyone's buying the Compressor Plus.
Right. Which isn't even the same circuit. This is the Ross or Dynacomp style compressor. Yeah. The Compressor Plus is a totally different compressor circuit. So I'm like, if you want an effect, if you want compressor effect, just two knobs.
That's the best. Is that your favorite compressor?
Yeah. It depends on what I'm doing. If I want the effect.
Yeah.
Effect, just the two knob Keeley. If I want that subtle, you know, more transparent compressor, I use the Origin Effect Cali 76 stack.
Ah. Yes, that is
the Duo 1176.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we're massive fans of StringJoy guitar strings, and you should be too. StringJoy, if you don't know, are the world's first true string custom shop. That's where they started, with the idea to offer extremely high-quality strings in all the funny gauges that you could possibly need. Shredders looking for a thicker bottom end, country players looking for extra twang, etc. But what they've become is something much more. StringJoy realized that the standard that us players accept for string quality is pretty low. Manufacturers have been building cheaply and quickly for years, and we've just accepted that as par for the course. And most of us probably didn't really know any better. So StringJoy moved into actual standard string gauge manufacture too, offering the same superior quality, craftsmanship, and attention to detail that they do with their custom sets. Their whole thing is to be the best, not just to make the most. So I think they're well worth your time and interest. StringJoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock StringJoy yet, ask them to.
Yeah, I had that for a little while, their bass version. It was fantastic, yeah. Really great, but I felt it did its job slightly too well for me. I just needed something a bit, that was a bit more obvious. But it's a fine line to tread, because certainly for my board, for gigging, the Fat General by Thorpe FX, that gives me enough, like, vintage sort of suckiness. You can really hear that it's compressed, but still dynamic enough that I can still use other things on top of it, and it sounds natural. So that's the perfect one. For if I'm recording, if I'm at home, then I have the Analog Man Bicomp, which is part like Orange Squeeze, part Dynacomp. I mean, it's such aggressive compression that you need to choose. You'd never have it as an always-on compressor.
Right.
It is for effect, but it is absolutely good, without a doubt, the best vintage-sounding compressor I've ever heard. It's super cool. Yeah.
And with the Thorpe, at least that one is also built so well that you could use it as a weapon in a bar fight. I mean, because like the Origin effect, that thing is a weapon.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt somebody.
Yeah, I love those sort of the chassis are just that sort of folded steel chassis that they go for. There, I don't know how they have so much weight to them. I don't know what they're putting in there.
So heavy. It's, I have the Revival Drive, the big the double version, and that thing is it's hefty. If I put it on a pedal board, it can't go on a big pedal board because it just starts to get too much.
Yeah. Yes, I bet. I bet. Now, we've got some other news bits and things that we've got that we want to talk about, but I just want to take a little beeline right at this point to talk about the Vintage Pro Shop guitar build. I want to talk about some of the colors that have been being suggested. So, week one, we introduced it, or we suggested the, you know, what body shape options we were going to have vintage guitars make, basically Gibson and Fender style instruments. So you had a choice of most of those body shapes. It was pretty much decided. Week two, we announced Jazzmaster absolutely won. You are offset junkies, dear listener. It wasn't even a contest in the Facebook group, and largely by messages I was being sent, DMs and stuff. Everyone was saying Jazzmaster. There was a tie in the Patreon between Thinline Telecaster. Was it Thinline Telecaster? Yeah, Thinline Telecaster and Jazzmaster. I would have loved it to have been a Thinline Telecaster. For me, I think that would have been slightly cooler, but I accept majority rules, and the Jazzmaster has won. So last week, we were like, we need you to pick a color. And I realized, oh, I hadn't really thought ahead. And I was like, oh, right. This is slightly more complicated than me just saying Strat, Tele, Jazzmaster, Les Paul. This is any color you want on the planet. So there's no way I could make a poll. So what I said was, suggest some things, you know, message me. I put a post up about it on the Patreon and a post up on the Facebook group. And dear listener, you could all let me know. You could DM me. People sent me stories, links to interesting guitars. And I meticulously have been through a whole bunch of them, and I've shortlisted the most voted things. Unfortunately, I did, when Matt was last week, when Matt was trying to describe a sort of light sparkle champagne finish, I described it as light piss sparkle. And this has been, people have grabbed hold of this and have suggested this a lot. So actually, probably the most voted for thing is light piss sparkle, but I'm not going to put that one forward. I'm kiboshing that one right now. We're not having light piss sparkle, but I've boiled it down to six colors right now that have the most votes. So I'm going to put this into a poll for you guys to all vote on next week. So what do you think, Philip? What do you think is going to be in there?
Shell pink's going to be in there. I feel like that's a given.
Shell Pink made it in a couple of times. Weirdly enough, this is an odd one to be popular. Shell Pink over Sunburst.
No, dude. Oh, yeah. No, I'm here for it.
That got loads of votes. Like, you expect when it's color over color. The problem with color over color, dear listener, is at this point, you're all going to suggest a different one. So it's no color over color option is going to get enough votes to go through. But this one actually has. So Shell Pink over Sunburst. And Shell Pink's made a third appearance in another color over color. So I guess disregard everything I just said about color over colors. Black over Shell Pink.
That's an interesting one to have made it through. So you got black over Shell Pink. You got Shell Pink over three-tone Sunburst.
Yeah.
You got just Shell Pink.
Yeah.
Did three-tone Sunburst by itself make the list?
I would love it if it had.
I'm so disappointed if it didn't, because y'all, three-tone Sunburst is the best guitar finish ever.
It's a great finish.
I know I'm a boomer. I get it. But I freaking love a great three-tone Sunburst. Okay, so that didn't make it. So we've
just
got...
Just outside of this list of six, I have to say black, just black. People were saying like black with a matching headstock, torque guard, things like that. People were suggesting more things to, you know, round it off their decision, like heavy relic black. But black almost made it. It didn't quite have enough. I didn't want to put too many things in this list. And also candy apple red.
Did it make it? Pineapple no, Red?
Didn't quite make it. Didn't quite make it.
I think black is awful until you add the matching headstock. Then you're like, oh, okay. Now, like, oh, this is okay. I can deal with this.
Sure. It, black needs other things around it to make it interesting. I mean, yes. I really like it as like a functional guitar. Certainly in my band, I like playing black instruments because it suits the aesthetic. But if I want a standalone instrument in a room, it's probably not going to be just a straight black.
All right. So what are our other three?
So another pink has made it in. This one I'm here for. Neon pink. I am here for that.
80s neon pink?
Neon pink, yeah. So I think if you go to vintageguitarsrus, the letter R, .com, and you go to the Pro Shop, I think the third guitar in is their V75, which is a maple necked Telecaster. It is in neon pink. They have an option for that. Matching headstock.
With a matching headstock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm seeing this. I get it. That's a pink over black too. So.
It does. Yeah. It does look like it's a color over color there, which is kind of cool. I really liked bubblegum pink, which is a color that they introduced. We had a couple of votes for that, but just not enough to quite make the list. So I was disappointed to see that one not make it. But I think we've got pink is pretty well represented. We've got shell pink, shell pink over sunburst, black over shell pink, and neon pink have all made the top
four
list.
Out of six options. All have pink involved. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other two, this one not too far from it, purple sparkle.
Ooh,
the only sparkle finish to get enough suggestions to go in.
Well, then that one needs to win because sparkle. Come on, sparkle man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Black sparkle, I can get behind.
Which I don't even have a single guitar in a sparkle finish. I don't know why I'm so excited about it.
Isn't your Gres sparkle?
It's like it's got a little bit of like a flake to it. I wouldn't call it what I think of as sparkle.
Right.
It's close. It's got a black and it's got silver and blue sparkle to it, but it's I don't know. Maybe that's what people are thinking. I don't think of it as like a true like sparkle. When I think of sparkle, unfortunately, looking at Kaur guitars has ruined my idea of what sparkle finishes actually are.
I see.
Because Doug Kaur's sparkle finishes are absolute utter works of art.
Yeah. Large flake.
Like giant. Very giant flake. Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I think sparkle finish.
I always think of the Danelectro baritone. When I think of sparkle, the black sparkle.
Well, in that case, yes, my Gres is much closer to that because actually that was the Danelectro was my inspiration for the finish on my Gres. Right.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool looking guitar. Now, the last entry for colors, I tried to sort of, you know, I was trying to push this idea on the last podcast. You know, I'm thinking olive drabs. What a great color olive drab is. We've seen a resurgence on sort of Gibson style guitars recently. Come on, this is a cool color. Let's do it. Weird how many greens we got. So many green options. Loads of olive drab suggestions, not quite enough, but loads of Sherwood green that got suggested an awful lot as well. And I was like, wow, this is very strange. I don't think of greens as being a popular in vogue color, but plenty of them. And the one that actually made it into the list, the top list, British Racing Green has made it in.
Ooh.
Which I think could look killer with a torque guard on a Jazzmaster. I appreciate all the others are great colors in their own right, but when I step back and I think about Jazzmaster, like a relic BRG with a torque guard with a matching headstock, I'd be here for that.
Can they do a racing stripe on that?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking we might make a few sort of extra, like might decide some things without the listeners at the end, like a couple of little extras here and there. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's a great green. I love that one a lot. Oh, do a matching headstock on that one too?
Yeah.
I just like matching headstocks. So well,
I hope the listeners choose a Telecaster neck on this.
Please don't.
That's not what you want.
No. A Tele headstock on a Jazzmaster body, it just looks wrong.
No.
Just no. You think? No. Listeners, don't listen to Joe. don't listen to Joe at all. Yeah. Please. Now they're going to all do it just to spite
me.
They
won't. Okay. They went against all my suggestions last week. Well, except for the piss champagne finish that they wanted. But
I love it.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
So there's your color options. Those are really good.
Yeah. Shell pink over sunburst, purple sparkle, black over shell pink, British racing green, and neon pink. That's the poll that's going to go out on Patreon and Facebook. And I'll put it out on Instagram as well, I guess, as well. And then, dear listener, you'll be able to let us know. Whew. And then
vote early and vote often.
Yeah. I don't know what to do after that. It's either going to be, we'll either choose the neck or the pickups. Maybe we should finish the body first, do pickups next, do neck last.
Yeah, so
We'll see. But
I'm here for it.
Yeah. I'm rooting for one single coil in the bridge. That's it. But I know it's not going to win.
One P90 in the bridge.
Yeah.
No, that's never going to win, Joe. That will never win.
No, I know. It will definitely be two pickups, annoyingly. Yep. But that's fine. We'll see. We'll see what everyone suggests. Maybe it will end up being a Telemaster. That would be cool. I could get behind that.
I could get behind that.
But yeah.
That's super rad. Well, I'm excited to where this is going. And I will be voting as well. And I did not vote for the Jazzmaster body, but I can work with this.
What did you vote for? What was your favorite?
I voted for 335.
The guitar that you couldn't edit at all in any way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually. But,
that's fine.
So funny that you say that. Right. I really want a 335, but I don't want to spend loads of money. I know I'm selling all my guitars. I know I am, and I still am. I still am.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, we're doing this thing with vintage guitars, and, like, they were like, you know, we will do you a deal on anything if you want some stuff for you. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I love a deal as well.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Me too.
And I was just thinking of their VSA 500, which is their 335. They do a lovely black one with gold hardware and gold pickups, Wilkinson pickups in there. It's you know, it's a lot of guitar for £500. I appreciate that, you know, what we're talking about here, dear listener, is, you know, sort of an Epiphone standard, that sort of level of guitar. I'm not pretending it's going to be anything other. I just don't want to spend $3,000 on a 335, and I've never owned one. Never owned that style body. I've had 175, you know, I've had that big, deep jazz box. Never had the thin but big jazz box.
Have never noticed on the this is a VSA 500. I think that's the model you said.
Yeah.
I've never noticed that it is slightly offset.
Yeah. The way the main picture is on their website, they've got like, it's like angled. Sort of a like three-quarter angled, dear listener. And so it looks very much like a 335 like that. And when you see it in real life, it's quite offset.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at other pictures from other listings, not just from their website. It is surprisingly offset.
Yeah.
Is that
off-putting for you, do you find?
It is, actually.
I found that with their SG.
It looks like a 335 that was slightly melting. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a lot of offset. Still, the thing about vintage is that they are good. They are well built, well set up. The hardware and the pickups are very good quality. I trust them more than I do an Epiphone, I think, at this sort of price point.
So my local shop is a vintage dealer, and I've played bunch of them there. Yeah, they're a dealer. So for
weirdly, I had no idea vintage were even a brand in the States.
Oh yeah. They're carried in a lot of shops. I've seen them much more often lately. But yeah, they're a vintage dealer, so I go in there and listeners, just like everybody else, I go in my local shop once or twice every couple of weeks. And I sit around, chat with the guys in the shop, and I pick those up. And I think they play and sound great. I think they're really good guitars. So when you see, y'all said that y'all were doing this with Vintage, I was like, well, this is going to be a great, it's going to be a great guitar when it's done. Don't know that I trust the chef by committee approach, but,
but
we'll see. We'll see what y'all come up with.
We'll see. We've done okay so far, but I mean, we've only chosen one thing. So who am I kidding?
Right. You picked a jazz master.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. Oh, well. Oh, well. We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, so I'm thinking about picking one of those up anyway. So we'll see. I'm going to go see the guys at Vintage at the London International Guitar Show. So when that happens, and I'm at a guitar show surrounded by guitars, inevitably, I'm probably going to come home with something. So,
oh, Joe.
We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Just one more thing you have to sell.
I know. It's terrible. Anyway, that pretty much brings us up for time for this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Philip, we didn't get to talk about your new amp purchase, and we want to talk about some other things as well.
We can talk about ridiculous stuff over on the Patreon. It'll be great.
That's exactly what we're going to do. Dear listener, you can join us there, patreon.com/guitar nerds. If you just hop on over there, it's got all the information on how you can sign up and become a member of the Guitar Nerds elite. Philip and I are going to be there now. If you're not listening to the 40 Watt podcast, you absolutely should. It's you know, better than this one, more informative.
I don't know about better.
Every single week. Well, not quite every single week.
I wish it were every single week, but my job gets really busy during the summer, so I tend to fall back to every other week or occasionally every third week. But we're approaching the end of season 3. And then season 4 will start up next in mid to late January, and the new theme music will be performed by our own Joe Branton, who is
you're actually going to use that now.
I'm going to use it next season. Wonderful. So it's going to be great.
Wonderful. Yeah. Great. Well, yes, you can look forward to that. What's happening on the next episode of 40 Watt? What have people got to look forward to?
Let's see. By the time this episode goes out, I will have had Hank from Rattlesnake Cables on to talk about cables. We're going to talk about the ludicrous myths around guitar cables. At least I'm going to try to get him to talk about the ludicrous myths around the guitar cables. And I don't know. I've had a couple of really, really fun guests on lately. I had Marcus and Izzy Reeves from Reeves Electro on.
I saw that. That's fantastic that you got them on.
It was so fun. I love those two so much. They're just so much fun to talk to and just the kindest, sweetest people. Yeah. I believe Marcus is looking to try to come to NAMM in January, and I'm going to be at NAMM. So that'll be a great time.
Wonderful.
But yeah, I also had Mark from Summer School Electronics, who's just had a couple of great October release pedals, limited edition pedals come out. So it's been a fun time over there.
Awesome. Wicked. Well, dear listener, definitely check out the 40 Watt podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And join us over on Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. I'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Au revoir.
Thank you very much, you wonderful people. Thank you especially to our $10 top tier Patreon backers. Very soon, some of you will be receiving your goodie bags, but for now, thank you very much to Nicholas Strom, Rocket Rob Patterson, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Izao Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski,
Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Storr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravitt.